Have you ever failed? Anyone ever failed? Have you ever failed a class? Anyone ever failed a class in school? Anyone ever failed a class? I took pre-calc like 3 times because I wanted to get it really well in college. I failed some in high school. I went to summer school a couple times just because I missed my friends, wanted to hang out with them. That was kind of fun. Have you ever printed something that was supposed to be right side up, but it came out upside down? Anyone ever done that? Anyone ever done that? I've done that. You got an example of that today. We'll talk about that in a minute. That's kind of part of the message, though. Yeah, have you ever, anyone ever been fired? Anyone ever been fired? It's a church. You can tell, be honest. Anyone ever been fired? Look, and there's just, all these people are okay. All right, isn't that funny? You failed. You got fired. You blew it. Have you ever said something that you meant to be like helpful and it ended up being hurtful and you didn't even understand that it was hurtful when you said it, but it was? Anyway, all husbands, raise your hands, because that's what we do all the time. We say stuff that we think is going to help and it ends up hurting. We fail all the time, don't we? Lots of people. Maybe you haven't felt. Maybe none of those things you can identify with. But maybe you can identify with some of these people. I brought a video clip in, some home movies in for you guys to enjoy here. So check these guys out. Maybe you can identify with he kind of did that. Have you ever felt like those people? Did anything like that ever happen? You ever trip and fall and drop everything and you're trying to be cool and all of a sudden you realize you're not and it just kind of, everything goes the wrong way. That happens to all of us. We're going to continue in our, kind of doing a verse-by-verse study of the book of Exodus. We'll speed up as we get further into the book, though. But we're talking about holy Moses, and remember, Moses was holy because, not because he's like better than other people, he was just set apart by God for a special purpose. And the Bible calls everybody that's a Christian to be holy as he is holy, to be set apart for God's special purpose. And that's kind of what we're talking about. It's kind of good. I like that we're looking at Moses' failure today from Exodus chapter 2 because he blew it. That's one of the reasons that I love the Bible and that I know that it's true is because it doesn't just record the good stuff. It records when guys fail. The heroes of the Bible fail all the time. I mean, Peter, look at Peter. I mean, he failed. He denied Christ, is embarrassed by. I mean, it's just amazing the ways that Peter fell and failed. And David, man after God's own heart, the most famous guy, wrote the book of Psalms. He was an adulterer and a murderer. And it records it. It doesn't try to hide. It doesn't try to cover it up. If I was going to make a book up, I would make the heroes be like Superman, where they never messed up, right? You wouldn't record that. That's one way that I kind of know the Bible is accurate. And also it helps me because I can kind of identify with these guys sometimes. And it really ends up being kind of encouraging. We've all kind of failed every now and then. You know, you've wanted to encourage someone and you end up discouraging them instead. Or you made a decision trying to help your family financially, and it ended up just costing you more and more money later on down the road, like you bought a Volvo or something, I don't know. But you try to do something, you invest in something, you take a risk and start your own business. And you know, before you started, you know, you're thinking about all the ways you're going to spend the money in a year because you're going to be totally rich in a year. And then you realize that that's not the case at all. And it ends up costing you money. Or maybe you fail so miserably that now you're still paying off from the last time you tried to do that. Or you worked real hard to get the job done and you stayed late at the office and you didn't take a vacation and you still lost the contract and you still messed it up and you still got fired. Or maybe you invested in the relationship and you sacrificed and you tried to put the other person first and you did everything that you could and it still fell apart. And I think if we're not careful sometimes, these failures that come into our lives, a lot of times, because what we'll do is, and maybe some of you are here today because this is the first time you've been in church in a long time, maybe because before you went to church and you saw people around you and it seemed like they had it all together and they could keep all the rules and the regulations, and then you tried and you were like me and you failed. You couldn't do it. And you kind of got tired of going and feeling guilty and coming home and realizing I can't live up to it, and so I'm just going to stay away. It's not going to work. Or maybe you failed in such a way that you feel like, maybe it's not even a spiritual thing. Maybe it's just in your business or your education or something, and you've just given up. Well, I don't want you to give up. I just want to encourage you today because Moses failed and God still used him. One of my favorite guys to quote is a guy named Winston Churchill, other than Paul. I like him, but he said that success is the ability to go from failure to failure without losing your enthusiasm. I think that's a great definition of success. It's not about avoiding failure. The only way you're going to avoid failure in life is to not do anything. And then, if you ask me, you're the biggest failure of all because you've wasted the opportunity that God has given you. George Bernard Shaw said that a life spent making mistakes is not only more honorable but more useful than a life spent doing nothing. And I think that's true, but what if you've blown it? I mean, really blown it. I mean, like blown it, like if we, like you would not want us to know what you did last week, kind of blown it. What if you have sinned and you're embarrassed? And what if it's the same sin you've been struggling with for so long and you're kind of getting tired of going to God and saying, God, will you forgive me? God, will you forgive me? God, will you forgive me? Will you change me? Will you forgive me? Will you change me? And you just feel like God's about to give up on you. And you just feel like a failure. What if you've really blown it and hurt the people that you care about the most when you really, deep down inside, just wanted to help them? Is there any hope for you? Well, there is. Because as everybody's known, we've all said something we should take back. We've all lost our temper. We've all given into a temptation before and wish we could do it all over. Moses was the same in the same boat as you. I think that's pretty cool. That's kind of encouraging to me. If you have a Bible, I have it on the screen and in your bulletin, but if you have a Bible, we'll look at some New Testament scriptures as well later. But Exodus chapter 2 is where we're picking up as we've been looking at this story kind of verse by verse here. And so here we are. We're going to pick up in chapter 11. And if you remember last week, we talked about how God, well, first we talked about how God is in control no matter what. Even when everything is going, looks bad, God's still there. When things are bad, God's still there. Things look bad. Last week we talked about how when the deck is stacked against you, God's still in control. And those of you guys that were here last week, you got the cool playing card. Y'all remember that? Those that weren't here last week, you should have been here. So, but it was cool. We had a great time. We were over in the Orange House. It was so different. Were you guys in the Orange House? All two of us were over there last week. It was really neat. I like it better in here, though, because we're going to fill this up. But now your job is to fill this up. So, but we met last week, talked about how when God, the deck is stacked against us, God's still in control. And so today, really, there's just two things. Just in case you check out halfway through, I want you to go ahead and get your blank filled in, because some of you guys, I know you're the kind that want to make sure you get the blank filled in. It's this, God, that your failure is not final. So just, you can fill in the blank now, you got that one. And I want you to remember that, but that's not the most important thing I want you to remember. I want you to remember this week. God is bigger than your failure. God is bigger than your failure. You may even want to write that down. God is bigger than your failure. You may even want to say it with me. God is bigger than your failure. Did you say it? Did everybody say that? Let's try it one more time. God is bigger than your failure. Really, you can say my failure. That's what I want us to get. That's what we see from the life of Moses here. So see, here's the story with Moses. Moses, we saw the first week we studied this, we saw how everything was going against the Jewish nation. For 350 years, they've been living in Egypt. God's promised them a land. They don't have their own land. They end up as a slave nation. And so they're here for 350 years at the time that Moses is born. And then the next week, we saw that Moses is born, and then Pharaoh sends out this law that says all the little baby boys should be, Hebrew baby boys should be thrown into the river. His mom makes him this little boat, kind of hides him in the river. Pharaoh's daughter finds him. And this is kind of what's cool, because the deck was stacked against him, but God was still in control. And here this kid that was supposed to be dead ends up getting raised by the guy's daughter who made the law that he should die. And then they pay his mom to take care of him while he's getting growing up a little bit. Then he goes and lives in Pharaoh's house, gets educated under Pharaoh's schools, learns military strategy, learns leadership, learns different languages, all at the expense of the government that was trying to kill him. So the deck was stacked against him, but God was still in control. And so now here he is at 40 years of age, and I think, and I'll show you the verse a little bit later from Hebrews, but I think at 40 years of age, Moses kind of wakes up. And Exodus doesn't tell us this, but from other scriptures, I think we can see that he doesn't just look out and see the Hebrews and think, boy, that's a bad deal. I feel bad for them. I'm just going to stay here in the palace and play my Xbox and enjoy my air. He didn't have all that, but he had everything there while they were slaves and being abused. And so he said, I'm going to identify with my people. And I believe that he actually leaves the palace and says, you know what? I'm going to be a Jew from here on out. I'm not going to be identified with them. I'm going to identify with my people and try to help them. And that's kind of where he is here in verse 11. It says, one day when Moses had grown up, and we know from other texts as well that he's about 40 years old at this time, he went out to his people and he looked on their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. So this Egyptian slave master was a common occurrence. He's got these guys that are building pyramids, whatever they're doing, and he doesn't like what they're doing, and he's beating them. The Hebrew word actually means he's beating him nearly to death. And so he sees this happening, and look what he does, though. He does what would normally kind of seem right, but you can tell he knows what he's about to do is wrong, because in verse 12, he looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian, and he hit him in the sand. He kills the guy. And it's not like he accidentally did it. I mean, he looked to make sure no one was looking. He forgot to look up, but somebody still knew. I mean, the Hebrew who was getting beaten still knew. So here we go, the hero of our story, murderer. How weird is that? You would think that we would be studying some guy that never made a mistake, that didn't do this, but that's not what happens at all. So here our hero becomes a murderer. The next day, when he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, why do you strike your companion? So he goes back out, he's still identifying with them, tries to help. Why are you doing this? He says. The guy that's beating up the other guy answered and said, Who do you think you are? He said, who made you a prince and a judge over us? At which point he could have said, well, I'm from Pharaoh's house, but I think he's identified with them by now. The guy basically says, you know, who do you think you are? And then he says some words that cut to Moses' heart, because I think he already feels guilty and bad about it, and he knows he's in trouble. But then this Hebrew who I think probably in Moses' mind, he's thinking, if I start to help them, they're going to rally around me and it's going to be great. And it just ended up being a giant big fail, because the guy says, do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and he thought, surely the thing is known. His sin was public knowledge. Surely Pharaoh's guard, they're doing an investigation. And as they do the interviews, they're going to find out that it was Moses that did this. And they do, actually, because in verse 15 it says, when Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and he stayed in the land of Midian. Now, to go from Egypt to Midian, I mean, that would be like moving from Orlando to Middleburg or Palatka. Or, I mean, somewhere. I mean, I grew up in Middleburg, so it's bigger now. But I mean, it's like going to there's a Molasses Junction that's around here somewhere. Anybody ever been to Molasses Junction? I mean, that's what Midian's like. It's like Molasses Junction. I mean, it's just nowhere. It's the middle of nowhere. And so here he goes. I mean, get the picture. Here's Moses. He's raised in the palace, has this thing in his heart, I think, that says, I'm wanting to help my people. I'm going to be a deliverer. God's trained me. I'm ready to go. He tries to help and fails and ends up in the middle of nowhere where no one knows who he is. He's in a desert. We'll see from the story later on, he spends 40 years in this place. 40 years, man. Imagine that. So he gets out there and he sits down by a well. Now, a well is kind of like the center of this one-horse town. I mean, everybody, you're in a desert, you have to have water, so everyone always comes to the desert, to the well. The priest of Midian had 7 daughters. And now this priest of Midian, he's worshiping a whole different god too at the time. It's a totally different priest deal. Probably had some Abrahamic descent, so he might have known a little bit about the true God, but we don't think he was a priest of the true God. He had 7 daughters. 7 daughters. Whew. I've got 2, man, and that's enough. I mean, I tell you, 7. I mean, 7 ballet lessons, 7. I mean, is that, that's like 70 fingernails to paint, right? That's 70 fingernails to paint. 70 person, 7 person. It's a lot. So this guy's got 7 daughters. They came and drew water, and they filled the troughs to water their father's flock. They're taking care of the sheep. They're taking care of the flock. And when they're doing that, the shepherds came and drove them away. So he's got 7 daughters, and they're at a well. Moses is down by the well. He's probably sitting down, if he's like me, having a pity party, going, man, I just blew it. Man, I had everything back there in Egypt. I had a big room. I had a palace. I had it made. I was just trying to help, and I lost my temper, and I killed a man. And now I have that guilt to live with. Not only that, but now my own people don't want me. Not only do my own people not want me, but the most powerful man in the world is seeking to kill me. And I've gone from having it all to having nothing. And he sits down by a well. But see, I think Moses was had deliverer in his DNA. I think that's just who he was. That's who God designed him to be. Because he sees these 7 ladies and they need help. Because probably, I think all the time they would come to this well, and the shepherds, which shepherds are like the guys like me, they're like from Middleburg. They're the country guys that just they bring the level of the neighborhood down when they show up, and these guys roll up on these ladies, don't have any manners, and they just cut them off and they push them away and they say, we want to get to the well. They may have let them draw the water out first and then said, okay, you guys go away, we're going to water our flocks. Whatever it is, they normally did this, and they came to do that. The shepherds, verse 17, came and drove them away, these 7 daughters of the priest of Midian. But Moses stood up and saved them. He's a deliverer. He helps. He could have said, man, I totally failed. I'm not ever going to try to help anybody again. It's over for me. I'm done. But he doesn't, and he saves them. And he watered their flock. Now Moses has got to be a tough guy. That's the other thing about the Bible. I mean, that's the thing. We have this idea that Moses and all these like guys that God uses are these soft hands, little wimpy guys, and that's not the case at all. I mean, he ran off the toughest rednecks in the country. He just got, somehow he got them to go away and let him water these flocks. And he came, and so when they came home to their father, then not only that, but he serves. Leaders serve as well. He waters their flock for them. When they came home to their father, Reuel, which we believe that's his last name, his first name was Jethro, not Bodine. But it's getting country, more country all the time, isn't it? This story. But Jethro, Reuel, but anyway, so this is the priest of Midian. He said, the man said, how is it that you have come home so soon today? He's asking his daughters, you guys are back quick. And the reason he asked that is because I think it was a normal occurrence for them to have to go to the well and fight around the shepherds and wait their turn and try to get their water. But Moses goes and helps them. They said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. He said to his daughters, then where is he? You should have brought him home. Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. So he gets a wife out of the deal. Now he's going to get a wife with it. He gets a son. She gave birth to a son, and he called his name Gershom. For he said, and the name Gershom means that I have been a sojourner or a foreigner in a foreign land. So I can kind of tell that Moses is still having a little bit of a pity party. He hasn't quit. He's still trying, but he's lonely. He's by himself, far away. Ends up being here for 40 years as a shepherd, mind you. Do you remember 2 weeks ago when we started this whole deal? Shepherds in Egypt were not the most popular guys in town. They were kind of really despised, really looked down on. And so now that's what he gets to spend the next 40 years of his life doing. But God, it looks like God's out of the picture, but he's not. In verse 23, during those many days, the king of Egypt died. And we'll pick back up on this next week again. And the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery. So at this point, 350 plus 40, 390 years have gone by. And the people have groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Actually, this may even be 50 years beyond that, or 40 years beyond that. So we're over 400 years now. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning. And God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. Now, here's the thing, just real quick, I want you to get from Moses' story here, is that Moses totally failed. There's no way around it. He blew it. He sinned. He ran away. He's lost it all. But God still used him. His failure was not final, and God was bigger than his failure. And the same is true for you. Your failure is not final because God's bigger than your failure. So a lot of times we think of failure as an identity when all it is an event. It's something that happened on the way to where you're going. And so many times we'll take it and we'll say, no, that's who I am, and that's not who you are. And you know, I know how your failure is not final. Remember we did the test last week. How you can tell, because sometimes there may be a day when you commit a failure and it'll be final because it'll be the last thing you ever do, maybe. But you know how you know your failure is not final? Remember the test we did last week? You take two fingers like this and you go like this. If you feel something beating right there, your failure is not final. God's not finished with you. You're still here. You're still hope. God still has a plan and a purpose for you, or you wouldn't be here. So it's what happened. It's not who you are. Listen, what happens in you is more important than what happens to you. What happened in Moses was that he learned to depend on God. We're going to see that 40 years later, he goes back and confronts the most powerful man in the world, not in his own strength, but in the strength of God. And I believe that if he had tried to do that at 40 years old, he would have tried to strategize against him. He would have tried to do it in his own power, and it never would have worked. But God was still making him into what he wanted to be. And God even used his failure to develop him into the person that he needed him to be to deliver a whole nation. See, here's the cool thing. God will use someone who failed to help a whole bunch of people. In fact, God has to use people who have failed to help people. Because there's only one person that never failed at anything, and that's Jesus. Yet every other person that God's ever used, every person that God's used in your life to encourage you, every person God's used to encourage me, every person that God used to write the pages of this book had failed and sinned and fallen short. And maybe, just maybe, the failure that's come into your life has come at just the right moment and just the right time. And your failure may be the very thing that was needed in your life to humble you so you could be used by God. Maybe your failure is just what you needed to realize that you can't measure up to God's standards. See, there are a lot of people fooling themselves, going through life, thinking that they never failed. And they're in churches all the time thinking, I kept the rules, I did the right thing, so I'm right with God. And that's not how you get right with God. I think he makes you. I think it's important to follow his law and do those things, but that comes after you trust him. And a lot of people won't come to trust him because they think that they can earn it. They think that they've made it. But I'm telling you, the Bible says that all have sinned. All have fallen short of God's glory. And maybe your failure is what it took for you to get to the place in your life where you realize, God, I don't measure up. I can't make it. And maybe it's in that lowest part of your life that you are finally willing to say, God, I want to turn from my sin. And I want to place my faith in you, Jesus, because I believe you died on the cross for my failure, for my sin. Because I sinned against you. I broke your law. I didn't murder a man like Moses, but I did whatever it was that I did and more. And God, I can't pay for that myself. And I can't do enough good to make up for it. And I need you to forgive me. And so, Jesus, I believe you died on the cross. And I want to give my life to you. I believe you're alive today. And I just want to surrender to you. And that's what some of you honestly, that's what you need to do today. You need to get to that place today where you say that and you come to God and you surrender your heart to Him. Because coming to church won't get you to heaven. Being good won't get you to heaven. Trusting Jesus will get you to heaven. And when you do that, He'll change you. But that's what it takes. That's what it's supposed to be all about. Somewhere along the way, we've made it about something else sometimes, I think. But that's what it is. And that failure can be one of the best things that's ever happened to you if it gets you to trust Christ. If you're a Christian, if you've done that and you fail, God still uses that. Paul shared some of his failures in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. He's writing to them and he's letting them know about his past and some things that have gone on that he didn't like the way they turned out. And he says in verse 8 that we don't want you to be ignorant, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia. So he's talking about some bad stuff that happened to them. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. I mean, think about this. This is the Apostle Paul. He's saying, I despaired of life itself. I was so down. I mean, I didn't even want to live. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but here's the thing, that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He said, God let me come to the end of myself so that I could then depend on Him and Him alone. And that's what God wants you to get from your failure, where you depend on Him, where you trust Him, not that you give up, but that you realize this failure is not final. Embrace it and say it's real, but you know what? God's bigger than my failure. There's an old saying in Texas. There's an old saying in Texas, I hear it. It says, it doesn't matter how much milk you spill as long as you don't lose your cow. I think that's a good saying. It doesn't matter how much milk you spill, as long as you don't lose, just don't lose the cow. And some of you guys have spilled an awful lot of milk. If you look back over your life, you look back over relationships, you look back over your career, and it's spilled milk, spilled milk, spilled milk. But you know what? Haven't lost the cow yet. We're still here. We can still go on. We've got a fresh start today. And that failure wasn't final. God's bigger than our failure. And we can keep going. Let your failure, here's the thing, you know, let your failure force you to God, not away from God. So many people fail, they quit, and they run away from God, and they need to be running to God. On August 6th, 1999, this guy stepped up to the plate. His name was Tony. His name was Tony Gwynn. You ever heard of Tony Gwynn? He's one of the best batters in the history of baseball. But on August 6th, 1999, he made his 5,113th out. That's a lot of outs. It would take 8 years getting up to bat four times playing baseball every day to get 5,113 outs. But on that same day, August 6, 1999, in Montreal, Canada, he got his 3,000th hit. See, Tony Gwynn is one of the best hitters in the history of baseball. And he only gets a hit one out of every three times he gets up to the plate. He does a little bit better than that sometimes. Some seasons he did better. He hit a 400 one year. But think about that. They pay this guy millions of dollars to fail two out of every three times. And what does he do when he fails? He says, that's it. I'm not coming back. Well, he's retired now. He's an analyst. He's doing really good. He didn't quit. So you know what? We failed. You know, what? Your bulletin's upside down today, right? You know what's kind of cool about that? You know what's kind of cool about that? You can still read it, can't you? You can still read it. You know what I'm going to do next week? I'm not going to do a bulletin next week because I failed this week. It was upside down. We're just not going to have one. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to print one right side up, right? It's going to be fine. It's going to be. I really did it on purpose. I did one on accident. And I said, hey, let's do them all like this. And so, I want you to keep that to remember. Remember that your failure is not final. And that even if you've messed up, you can still be used by God. You can still be used. You're still usable. That's it. Because everybody's messed up. Here's the deal. You know Thomas Edison failed 10,000 times? 10,000 times when he's trying to invent the electric light bulb? Yeah, I'm looking right there. He didn't invent one like that, though. But, you know, it's still there. He recorded them. 10,000 failures. Here's what he said about it. He said, I've not failed, but I've just found 10,000 ways that didn't work. I thought it was kind of good. And that's really it. And so that's when it comes to when you're trying something for God or when you're trying to be the person God wants you to be and it doesn't work, then, man, you got a whole new day tomorrow. You haven't lost the cow yet. Your failure is not final. There's a guy that was a soccer player. His name was Kyle Rote Jr. He said this, there is no doubt in my mind that there are many ways to be a winner, but there is really only one way to be a loser, and that is to fail and not look beyond the failure. He said, there's one way to be a loser, fail, and then don't get over it. Don't look beyond the failure. Because your failure is not final, because God's bigger than your failure. How was Moses remembered? I mean, we've looked at it. He murders a guy. He's living in the middle of nowhere. But look at how he's remembered in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. He's in this thing, we call it the Hall of Faith. It lists a bunch of people that were faithful to God, that God used greatly. And he says, by faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. That's why I think that he was not just going out and checking on his Hebrew brothers, but he was choosing to identify with them, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking to the reward. That's how Moses is remembered. How are you going to be remembered? How are your kids going to remember you from that failure that you faced this week? How is your wife going to remember you from your failure when you've blown it? We need to embrace our failures, I think. So many times we try to just avoid them, and I think they're the best classroom things we could ever have. What if you're just going to fail a lot in life? Thought about this week. I don't know if you've realized it. Do you realize that 49% of everyone in America is below average? Did you get that? Do you realize that? It was funnier at the Crab Shack. It's kind of funny, though, isn't it? 49% of the people in here are below average. Maybe. Probably not. You guys are an above average crowd. But 49% of all the people in America are below average. Now, here's the thing. If that's the case, because nobody, you don't know anyone, no one thinks that they are, but what if you are? What if I am? What if that's us? Well, how about this? What if then, why don't, instead of saying, well, that's not who we are, and we want to be the best below average person we could be or whatever, why don't we just embrace that and say, you know what, instead of worrying about what I'm not, I'm going to do what I'm good at. I'm going to do what I'm good at as best as I can to the glory of God. And maybe the Bible tells a story about a guy who gets a bunch of talents and somebody gets one talent. What if I'm a one-talent guy, then I'm going to be the best one-talent guy I can be. And even though I failed, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep on pressing. I realize that God's bigger than my failure, and I'm going to keep going. How will you, even if you've given up, God hasn't given up on you. I just don't want you to quit. That's the thing. They say that most entrepreneurs fail in their businesses 3.8 times before they make a success. I read about these four guys that were millionaires by the age of 35 this week. Not this week, they were a while back. But they became millionaires by the age of 35. And they each failed an average of 17 times. They were involved in 17 failed businesses before they actually made it. Can you imagine that? I mean, you know, what happens is you fail, you keep going. You fail, you keep going. That's the whole point of this. It's what Moses did. It's what God wants you to do. And I want you to do that this week. Listen. Let's try something for God this week. Let's try to do something, okay? We're going to have some homework assignment. We're going to try to do something big this week. And we're going to do the Tony Gwynn School of Church Growth right now. You ready? It's Tony Gwynn School of Church. How many of you have ever invited somebody to church with you? Did you do that? Because here's kind of a cool thing. If you invite someone just to come to church with you, I promise you, I'll tell them how to get to heaven. I promise I'll do that. We're going to make it as interesting and as welcoming as we can. We want them to have a good experience. But it's not just so we can have a good experience. It's because God loves them. And when they see from his word who he is, the light just might come on and they just might understand that they're sinners and need a savior, and they might give their heart to them and to Jesus. And if they do that, it might just change their life. And if it changes their life, it's not only going to change their life, but it's going to change their work environment. And if it changes their work environment, it'll change their home environment too. You're going to affect their kids, maybe even their grandkids. You could change the world just by inviting someone to church. So we're going to do the Tony Gwynn though thing. You ever invited someone to church and they didn't come? I've done that. You ever done that? You ever tried to do something like that and they didn't come? Well, I put in your bulletin this week, your upside down bulletin, 3 Holy Moses invite cards. So there's 3. So if Tony Gwynn only gets a hit 1 of every 3 times, you get to try to get a hit 1 of every 3 times. Just go ahead and figure, you know what? 2 people may tell me no, but I'm going to invite them anyway and say, hey, listen, I'm going to be there next Sunday. Be intentional about it. Don't get some extra cards back there on our free stuff table. There's tons of them. Get some extra ones and leave them on the tip, on the table with a great big tip at lunch today, like a 30-50% tip, something like that. But do that. But take these 3 cards. I want you to personally invite someone to come to church with you next week. They'll have a good time. It's going to be neat. We're going to talk about the burning bush. It's going to be an amazing. I'm really excited about the message. So do that. But there's one way you can do it. And even if you fail, then you keep on doing that. What if this week you saw someone that you could help? What if this week you saw someone that you could actually help, and you know some people that you work with that need help probably? You know some people in your neighborhood that need help. And what if you took the time to get to know them, to actually reach out to them, maybe to help them, whether it's financially or physically or whatever it is, and you're scared to because you're afraid, what if I mess up? What if I fail? What if they reject me? Well, what if they do? So, I mean, what if you lost? I mean, you try get involved and try to actually make a difference. What if this week, instead of kind of sitting back, because I think in all of you, I think God's put something in your heart that he wants you to do that I think if you're like me, you're a little bit of afraid to do it. You're a little bit scared of it. And you're a little bit afraid of failure. What if this week you decided to step out and do what you know God's calling you to do? And if you fail at it, check your pulse and try again the next day. Here's the cool thing. When you cease to be afraid of failure, even though you might lose, in a sense, you become inevitable. I mean, you become invincible, not inevitable. You become invincible because you're not afraid of failure anymore. Success is not final. This is what Winston Churchill said. Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It's the courage to continue that counts. And the way you can get courage to continue is found in Philippians chapter 1. And I've given you this because I want you to put this card on your mirror or somewhere in your car, in your wallet, or at your desk. Because I want you to remember this week, Christians. Philippians chapter 1, Paul's writing to a church that's been very encouraging to him, and you guys have been very encouraging to me. But here's what he tells them. He says, I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. So here's the deal. Even if you've given up on God, God hasn't given up on you. And if he started a good work in you, which I'm telling you, naturally people don't think a whole lot about God. And if God's been on your mind lately, I think that's because God's been doing something in you. I think that's God working in your life. And if God's working in your life, if you're still here, I think he's got a plan for you. And he hasn't given up on you. And even if you failed and walked away from him a long time ago or just last week, I believe that he's going to finish what he started in you. And that's what Philippians 1:6 will remind you of. So take that card and you do something with it to remember. Remember that your failure is not final and that God is bigger than your failure. And take that bulletin and put it in your Bible. And this week, whenever you open it up and you see that it's printed upside down, remember that God can use stuff that's even messed up, because we're all kind of messed up a little bit. And if God can use that and you were able to figure out some of those announcements and do all that, then God can use you, and he will use you. He's not finished with you, because maybe you spilled the milk, but you haven't lost the cow. Right? I love this song that we're about to sing, because it's about, you know, because so many times we talk about how when things are great, but this is a song about when things aren't great, when things are bad. And what I want you to do is really get it that when things go bad, that's not a time to really kind of question where God is. It's a time to look for God, and it's a time to run to God. But it could be one of the best things in your life if it helps you know God better, if it helps you live for God. So let's sing. I'll let you guys sit down. Will you sing good sitting down? I'll let you sing it sitting down. But I want you to sing it with me though. See if we can get it here. Oh, I gotta turn this on.